What is up, fellow suplexians? My faces and my heels, everything in between. We are back at it again. It is the Valley of the Suplex. We are here for episode 6. Back at it. We got a Survivor Series war game recap. A lot of electric things. Maybe a couple of things that went too long. We'll get down to brass tacks here in a second. Chris, my man, how are we doing tonight? How are we feeling?
Doing good, Nico. Glad to be back. We are back on track as we had intended. Last time in episode 5, we kind of talked about the end of the year here, maybe being a bit of a lull period, a bit of a rest period, but it almost kind of seems like things are starting to get interesting. So I'm excited to break down what happened at Survivor Series War Games and kind of look ahead to the future a little bit, time permitting. But let's not waste any time, Nico. Let's go ahead and dive into it.
Let's definitely dive into it. Last time we talked to you guys, we definitely previewed Survivor Series a little bit here. We actually had some pretty decent matches on the card, I'm not going to lie. I don't know, Chris. One of my big things with these like stipulation pay-per-views or PLEs is that it feels like it's hard if you're the second match, or it feels like you're in a tough place if you're right behind the last match or right before the last match, because everybody is expecting carnage or everybody has just witnessed carnage, especially with Survivor Series War Games. I mean, War Games, I love the addition to it. It can be a little bit hectic sometimes, but that's kind of what makes it fun. And it started off strong with a women's War Games match. It was maybe a little bit too long. It was honestly, for there being a real lack of storyline outside of Liv and Rhea, it was actually pretty strong showing. I think you just really got to give it to Io Sky, who I think saved that match for the women by putting a trash can on her head and flipping off the top of the Survivor Series cage. I also think Tiffany Stratton put in great work too. I think she was kind of the unsung hero of that match. But yeah, man, the second that Io slides the trash can on top, it is too funny. It is too funny because she just flops off like, wee. But yeah, man, I don't know. I thought we kind of got muddled in the middle. I know, and that's the tough thing with War Games, is that you have so much time for the actual match to build, and then by the time the match is built, you've been watching wrestling for about 20 minutes already. So for the average fan, I feel like it's kind of a tougher watch, just because it does take a lot of time. But all in all, I think it was a nice showing. I mean, you can't really blame the girls for having a long match, especially when it's the stipulation of War Games. All 10 of the women gave great effort. I don't know. I think Ripley winning with the Riptide on Morgan through a table was a nice chef's kiss to their little rivalry, because it kind of solidifies that Rhea is not going to get the belt back from Liv, at least anytime soon. Kind of sets that rivalry, hopefully, in the past. She's now moving on to, looks like, a rivalry with Raquel. But I don't know. What did you think about the first match, Chris?
Yeah, I'd agree with your assessment. Slow burn. It's tough. You know, I'm glad in a sense that they went with the women's War Game match. I don't think there's any world where the men's War Game match wouldn't be the main event, but having them broken up, I think, was smart, because if you do War Game match back to back, I think that could be a little grating on some people. But you know, it wasn't a bad first match. I think there were just a few things in there that I think they did to try and spice it up that I could have done without. I think first and foremost, it seemed like anytime one of these girls entered the ring, they were grabbing a weapon right away. And it's like, I get it. You can do it. It's part of the match. No rules and all that. But did you have to go grab a bat? Did you have to grab a chair? Did you have to grab a toilet seat, Nico? Did Nia Jax, where did she get that from? Was she just in the back taking a big fat shit before the event and was like, you know what? This would be a great weapon to bust. I don't know. A little weird. I do think it would be a nice way to put a bow on the Liv Rhea saga. I'd be glad to see that over, especially glad that Dom wasn't able to interfere this time. He was pretty much nowhere to be seen from what I saw. And I think taking that element out of it made it, obviously it wasn't just them one-on-one, which I think a lot of people would have probably wanted to see, but within the storyline, I think it worked. Yeah, that Riptide off the rope onto the table to finish it out was nasty. I thought it was a good match overall, especially for the first one getting the night started.
Yeah, and I did think it was a little bit long. The interesting thing too is, like you mentioned, the weapons, man. Raquel looked for a weapon for some time before not finding one, and then just getting in the ring saying "fuck it." So there was some definite disjointed moments, but all in all, I'd say, you know, for me, it was definitely more of a thumbs up than a thumbs down. So shout out to the women, because that's carnage.
I would be remiss if I didn't mention two more things. The thing nobody saw coming, Nico, absolutely nobody saw this coming. Tiffany Stratton pretending like she's going to cash in her Money in the Bank briefcase.
Oh, man.
How many more times are we going to see this, man?
Well, dude, and you know what the shitty thing was about this was that, like, this was a situation I never even thought was a possibility. She's sitting there with both champions laying on their back. She picks whatever championship she wants. They can start a feud with her and Liv. They can start a feud with her and Nia, which is kind of the way I feel like things have been going. For some reason, that for me makes that War Game match of the night, 10 out of 10, A+ stuff, because that's a genius way to end especially when we're all expecting that the finisher is going to come from Liv and Rhea. For Tiffany Stratton to pull out the briefcase and my mind be blown, and I think a lot of people in the arena were like, this is the finish. When it wasn't, I was very disappointed. And you know, hokey shit aside, like the toilet seat, you could have gotten away with the toilet seat if you had Tiffany cash in there. Because I think that's one of those cash-ins that everybody's going to talk about. Because War Games is relatively new. I know it's not new by any means, but it's new to WWE in the PLE sense. You know, we've had it for like 3 years or so. Otherwise, it was NXT, and then before that, Dusty made it famous. But to cash in a Money in the Bank contract in the middle of War Games with, you know, nine other women laying on their backs, like, oh, it was a moment missed by WWE. And I think that, you know, I'm sure that everybody was happy with the way it ended, but hopefully there was a bug in Triple H in the back of Triple H's brain going, shit, when you felt the energy in the room and the suspense of everybody going, oh, we didn't think about that. So yeah, that's a great point to bring up. I kind of glossed over it because you and I had talked about it previously off air. But like, yeah, no, it is. Man, that hurts. That one hurt me for sure because I was here for it.
I totally agree. That would have been a huge, huge opportunity. Big stage, doing it at a pay-per-view event. Missed opportunity for sure. But it got me thinking with all these failed attempts, teasing. I'm almost starting to wonder at this point if it's all building up to her waiting all the way until WrestleMania to cash it in. Because if I'm not mistaken, I think through my light research here, there's only been two people who have cashed in their Money in the Bank at WrestleMania, and I don't know if a woman has ever done it. So it could be like one of those, the first woman to cash in Money in the Bank at WrestleMania type of thing. But who knows? That's a long way out, right? We're still talking 3-4 months.
Yeah, it's a long tease for sure if they're going to do that. We saw them do this with Austin Theory with his Money in the Bank contract where he was, I mean, comically trying to cash in his Money in the Bank contract and then getting like laid out by fucking Braun Strowman or, you know, some other situation where, like, you know, somebody else is in the ring and they take care of Austin Theory. It's starting to get to that level. And for me, I thought that whole thing, personally, it just didn't agree with me. I think it kind of makes the Money in the Bank look like a joke at that point. And it's, to be fair, the Money in the Bank is one of my favorite events. I love the idea of having somebody with a briefcase that can cash in whenever, specifically for moments like War Games, when it's a situation where you go, shit, we didn't think it was possible. But I do agree. I think we've seen one coming. I don't know if she'll make it to WrestleMania.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of hope not. I'd like to see her just cash it in. You know, let's move on. It makes me wonder, though, if, like, why they do it that way, because you have the Money in the Bank match where the obviously whoever wins it gets this big opportunity, but they have to go through such a gauntlet to get it. They have to be a good wrestler unless they just luck into the win, which is, you know, could happen. But even then, nobody's going to remember that, you know, 3-4 months down the line necessarily is how they won, just that they've been carrying around this briefcase. So the idea that you have this top tier wrestler that went through the gauntlet, won the Money in the Bank, but is now so incapable of cashing it in. And you could call it a timing thing, but Tiffany Stratton just looks aloof whenever she pulls it out. Like, oh, I don't know what to do with this. It's like, it's ridiculous.
Which is so funny because, like, earlier in the match, she hits a swanton off the top of the cage with almost perfect timing with Io Sky. And none of that looks, I don't know what I'm doing. Oh, God. You know, like, she does. You're right. She pulls it out. She shoves it to the crowd. And then she looks at it like, oh, shit. What do I do with this thing? And it is. It does kind of do some harm to her character. I know her character isn't the brightest. It's all about Tiffy time and whatever. But, like, you know, ultimately, like, I think you're doing her a huge disservice as a wrestler to do it like that. But, you know, it is what it is. I thought that was, yeah. If this keeps going, they're going to lose the momentum they had for Tiffany Stratton because she made a very big splash. We were all very impressed. And I hope they don't Austin Theory her, because look at, like, Theory's like doing like weird tag team work with Grayson Waller now. Like, I don't want that for Tiffany Stratton. I think she definitely has potential to be like women's world champion. In Triple H we trust. I'm not, you know, I'm not in creative. I don't run any of that shit, but I will trust Triple H. Shout out to Rhea doing the same eye black as her husband, Buddy Matthews. That was a nod to Buddy, which I thought was super cool. But yeah, that rounded out the women's War Game match. Man, this like moves on to the second match, which like kind of like what we said, it sucks to be the second match on this card. But the second match on this card might have been one of the better, like matches that we saw all night. You had LA Knight versus the sudden return of Shinsuke Nakamura. The vignettes from Nakamura have been amazing. The presentation of him being this, like, I don't know, night ninja or something like that, where he's just an assassin and like a Jedi in Jedi clothing. It's gnarly. I love Shinsuke. I thought when he first came in and they debuted him, I thought he was like a drunken pirate or something. Like, and this like more reformed version. Yeah, this like the entrance was something to behold, man. Him with the fucking mask, and yeah, it was very well done by WWE, very well done by Shinsuke. And man, they don't call him the King of Strong Style for nothing. This dude goes out there and he lays wood when he wrestles. And, you know, and nobody better to do it with than LA Knight, because LA Knight does the same thing. But yeah, I think it's like tough to like drop this as the second match. And then the crowd just was not there because they had just witnessed it probably like 40 minute War Games match. They did a great job of making it competitive. It was a fast-paced match, which is Nakamura like signature. I don't know. It's to have your title transfer hands in a match that was probably a pee break match for a lot of people is slightly frustrating. The both wrestlers put in a great, great, great effort. But I don't know. It's slightly upsetting. The reverse DDT on the steel plate in between the rings, I thought was super sick. he just, I mean, he fucking dropped him on that too. There was a lot of like cool, like spots. And then, you know, Nakamura seals the deal with the Kinshasa. And I think the Kinshasa is one of the cooler finishers in WWE. It's definitely looks like it hurts. it was one where we were watching it. My wife openly went, "Ow, ow." But Nakamura defeats Knight. You know, I didn't expect this to, I truly didn't expect him to lose the belt. I think that's why I was so shocked. And it does feel like a big push for Nakamura, which I think he deservedly like needs, but I don't know, man. I felt like it maybe was a little slow at first, and maybe that has to do with the fact that we like are dealing with a crowd that's probably a little subdued after a War Games match. But it did kind of feel like yesterday's news almost while people were watching it, which sucks because I actually thought this was kind of a good match. But it'll be interesting to see how Nakamura defends the title. LA was a working man's, you know, champion. He was defending it at every turn. Does Nakamura do the nasty heel thing, which is not to defend it at all, which I don't want to see. I'd like to see a growth in this character. I don't know, man. What'd you think?
Yeah, no, I think, you know, you're right. It was kind of a better match than I think people expected. And it was kind of like, you know, after a long War Games match, expect people are probably going to be, you know, on their phones, going to the bathroom, whatever. Obviously, we've talked about the streaming aspect where people can pause and pick back up. But yeah, I thought the rebrand was really awesome. His intro and his entrance, his whole outfit was on point. And I didn't really, I'll be honest with you, Nico, I didn't know anything about this guy until this match started. And I was like, okay, this match is pretty good. And less than 10 minutes, they were in and out, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. The shortest match on the card of the night. And I was right there with everyone else. Like, not only for me, not really knowing anything about Shinsuke, but then to have the title change hands in such a short match and the second match of the night. If you watch back, there's a guy in the front row. He has like a beard going on and he's just kind of sitting there, looks kind of bored. And then he sees the pinfall happen and he goes, he's just like taken aback. He can't even believe what just happened. I think it woke a lot of people up at that point. So honestly, pretty genius match placement.
Yeah, I will say it definitely. I mean, it caught me off guard, dude. I didn't think that, you know, and I feel like I'm always looking for the fucking curveball from wrestling. So, yeah, fucking great. It was a well-produced match. Nice call having Shinsuke take the belt. Speaking of the streaming thing, I'm just going to put a little pause in here. Fucking Peacock, get your shit together because I can't wait. Like, if you miss the live PLE, Peacock now does a thing where, like, let's say we'll use this one for instance, right? The show aired at like 5 or whatever our time, 4 or whatever our time. Some of us have families, things that we need to do, you know. So I'm out doing stuff with my family. I think we got Survivor War Games later. I'll put it on when we get home. You know, we get home, it's like 9 o'clock. I'm like, there's no way that War Games isn't done. I turn on my fucking Peacock and it says, "Do you want to watch War Games? It's been airing for 9 hours and 57 minutes. Or 6 hours and 57 minutes, excuse me. And I said, What WWE pay-per-view is the length of an AEW pay-per-view? That makes no sense to me whatsoever. So I went to press play and Peacock doesn't let you play it from the beginning. It only lets you rewind to a certain spot and then it's fucking, that's as far as you can rewind until they make the event available for replay. Peacock, there has to be a better way to do this because now they're taking in the runtime of the post show, which is why it's posting 6 hours and 57 minutes for a PLE. Peacock, please fix your shit. I don't think anybody from NBC is going to hear this with my hands. I don't think anybody's going to from NBC is going to hear this, but like, man, it's so frustrating being, you know, thinking that you're going to go watch a PLE and then turn it on, not be able to get to the beginning point of the PLE. there should be an option from your menu to start from beginning if something's aired live and it's halfway through. So that's just – that's malarkey on Peacock and NBC's part. But nonetheless, I'll get off my little soapbox. I apologize. And then we had our Intercontinental title match coming up next after Shinsuke and LA Knight. This was a triple threat. I'm not going to lie. I don't know. Maybe I just don't give Ludwig Kaiser the respect that he deserves as a singles wrestler. But I was not necessarily looking forward to this. Just because it's like, man, we see Sheamus in this again. We know that this is the elusive title for Sheamus. It's the tease. It's the ultimate tease from WWE right now, is that this is like the one title that Sheamus hasn't gotten, and they'll do anything they can to put him in the actual title picture. And then Sheamus doesn't win. So for me, I was not super excited. I saw Ludwig Kaiser's name. You know, I figured this was just going to be a display of Bron Breakker's abilities. Man, they surprised the hell out of me. I think I should probably stop being surprised when I see Bron Breakker in a match, that it's good. But like everything this dude does, he showed great ability to work with two different types of styles. Like a tactician that Ludwig Kaiser is, and the brawler that Sheamus is, and he worked really well with him. He is absolutely I think he's going to be the future for WWE. He is a stud, super super athletic. Watching him and Sheamus, big meaty men slapping meat, beat the shit out of each other. It was awesome. Ludwig Kaiser, at one point, I think he tries to bring a chair into the ring, and Bron Breakker like lays him, like, I mean, absolutely lays him out. It was awesome. That was great to see, because I think with the size that Kaiser is and the size that Breakker is, when Bron Breakker hits him, it's like a pit bull getting a puppy. It's a whole lot of dude and then like just a body moving the opposite way. I'm not going to lie. It kind of felt like Sheamus, the near fall with Sheamus was super impressive. I definitely thought that there was definitely at one point in this match where I thought that Sheamus was going to get this elusive belt, but Breakker wins. I think that the question is, when do they put a different belt on Bron Breakker? Does Bron Breakker deserve to be a champion? I think everything we see, he is such a freakish athlete. He's like, you know, in the words of Pat McAfee, he's like one of those people that you put on up to the aliens to show them, like, this is what our species is, you know, like he's definitely one of those ones. You got a "This is awesome" chant from the crowd. I thought the Canadian crowd was really good. Not as good as some of the other ones have been in the past,
right?
But I think that they were definitely good, and they were good during this match. I think you're right. I think the Nakamura Knight match woke people up, and then this came afterwards, and this was an absolute Donnybrook. Just heads fallen. And shout out to Ludwig Kaiser, because he put in a much better of a match than I thought he was going to. It was impressive. Sheamus had a shillelagh, which I don't think I've seen Sheamus with the shillelagh since like fucking 2009. That was dope. I love seeing Sheamus with the shillelagh. Bron Breakker. I read this I heard this in an interview. Every singlet that Bron Breakker has is somehow an ode to Scott and Rick Steiner. The singlet he wore that night was also dope, classic, like Steiner nod. I don't know, man. What'd you think? I thought this was just clobbering time, you know?
Yeah. Oh, man. I mean, exactly what you said, like just big dudes going at it, like any combat sport, whether it's, you know, strictly entertainment or if it's like, you know, UFC, boxing, anytime you got big dudes beating the shit out of each other. I'm gonna tune in. I'm gonna check it out. And man, I'm with you. Like, Bron Breakker is going places. If he keeps this up, like, they're gonna have to do something. My jaw literally dropped, Nico, when he was, it wasn't this one, but on the, in the same spot, he did that flying, I don't know if it was a flying spear or flying shoulder, but dude can probably dunk a basketball. Like, he was at least like 5 feet, 6 feet off the ground, like parallel, like almost out of the camera frame, flying into these dudes. Just absolutely insane. I did think it was funny when Kaiser did get the chair in and he was like, thinking he was cute, setting it up in the corner. And you get that hokey moment where Sheamus and Braun are kind of trading punches. Sheamus gets a little comfortable and Braun has to remind him that this is a triple threat match and you can't be turning your back on your opponents. You know, that's all fun stuff. But man, the Bron Breakker spear is probably the best spear in the industry right now. And I struggle to think of anyone who has it better.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. I think if we're talking spears, like, and like, man, we're talking like Edge, we're talking like dudes who have made their money on a spear. Bron Breakker sells that like sweet candy to children, you know, like it is so impressive. And the guys who take it definitely do a great job of taking it, because that's, I mean, dude played football at Kennesaw State. He is familiar with how to stick somebody. So yeah, I mean, dude, he did he leapt from off the apron and did a clothesline to both Kaiser and Sheamus, and it sent them flying over the announce desk. There were multiple moments during this match where I dropped my jaw at the athleticism of Bron Breakker. Watching him run the ropes, man, I don't think everybody understands how hard those ropes are and the tension that's in those ropes. That shit hurts. So for him to be, I mean, he's got to hit like 13 miles an hour in like that ring. You know, he's flying. It's absolutely impressive. Fantastic match. This leads us to, I mean, the match that we've seen, the third time, actually, this is what we've seen. Damian Priest and Gunther. They played this weird angle in the buildup where they're trying to make Gunther unsure of himself, and he's nervous because Damian Priest is from the streets and he doesn't play by the ring general's rules. And you know, like, it was this odd angle that WWE took where it was like, let's make Gunther look weak for 3 weeks while we build to Survivor Series. I thought it was odd. I thought it made him look panicked. It did take a little bit of like the unbeatable force that is Gunther away from it. Like I said, this is the third time that these guys have fought, so they tried to do something new to shake it up. But if I'm Gunther, like, why are you really that worried? You haven't lost yet. Like, I don't see a cause for concern that this is the guy coming for your belt. I don't know. He during the match, he looked hesitant at some points, Gunther did. And the announcers were quick to chime in and fucking gummy that up and, you know, let everybody know, like, oh, Gunther looks, you know, he's nervous. Priest makes him nervous. You know, after that all shook off, Gunther really starts just, I mean, fucking laying into him. It was a match that I think, I don't know if it was people were just ready for the next War Games, but like, or people were tired of seeing this, but like, I don't know, man. I felt like the crowd was quiet during the match. Gunther's chops always get like a fucking loud of no, like reaction from the crowd. And if you've ever seen a Gunther chop in person, that noise is, it's scary, man. You feel it in your chest when you're hearing him smack somebody. And then you got to just, like, as a big brother, I five-starred my brothers quite a few times, but like, man, like those chops to the chest, they rattle through these arenas. But I don't know. It was all right. I like both these guys. I just don't like both these guys wrestling each other anymore. And I think that's what it is. I think I'm burnt out on it. they did try to add this twist at the end here, which was Priest like took a fall, Finn Balor out of nowhere hit him with the coup de grace, like. But then are we just like stirring this hornet's nest that is Finn and Damian Priest again? Why? We've done that, or we've done that. We've done the fallout of Judgment Day. We, you know, we don't need that. Gunther then in a Braun Breaker style takes out fucking Finn Balor because I mean, no one's going to do the Ring General's work for him. He doesn't even let Ludwig Kaiser do his work for him. So he absolutely wipes him out. And then he fucking, in what seems like, of course, in classic wrestling fashion, is a long time for someone to recover. He then picks up Damian Priest, who's just been laying there, catching fucking air. And he hits him with a power bomb and then puts him into a sleeper hold and wins the match. WWE's trying to make Priest look strong by not having him tap out. He fell asleep in the sleeper. The ref called it. I don't know, man. For me, I'm okay. I like these guys. I like the work they put in. But like, we have such a big roster. Can we get somebody else in here? Like, you know, is there anybody else that like, shit, man, like there's gotta be somebody. What's Carmelo Hayes doing? Like, what is Andrade doing? You know, like not that Andrade or Carmelo Hayes should be wrestling Gunther, but like put them in a program of Priest. Gunther can wrestle Finn Balor. Makes more sense than Damian Priest at this point. So I don't know. That is a brief recap of the match. And I just for me, it was okay. It was middle of the road. How'd you feel?
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. I really don't have too much to say on this one. It did feel like kind of a random match, like pretty ham-fisted throughout. I remember it was probably a month ago at this point. You had that Raw episode where Damian Priest says he wants a shot or whatever, blah, blah, blah. It just seems like I could be wrong, but it seems like maybe they're struggling to figure out what they want to do with Damian Priest, while also at the same time also kind of wondering what they want to do with Gunther. I mean, it seems like neither of those guys have been able to find like solid footing in a storyline over the past couple months. You had this weird like tit for tat with Gunther and Cody Rhodes, but like they both hold titles and like the whole Undisputed thing. I just think it kind of starts to get, you know, when it gets too muddy, it loses my interest a little bit. And so I think with this match, like, for such a long match too, I think it was damn near 20 minutes for it to just kind of have that kind of bleh ending. Didn't leave a great taste in my mouth, but maybe it was almost the inverse to the Shinsuke match where they're like, we really have to bring the bar down before the main event so that once the main event starts, that energy level goes right back up. Cause you don't want the energy to start high and then whittle away as the War Games match goes on. I don't know. Conspiracy theory brain here.
Yeah, man. It's funny that you brought up the WWE maybe doesn't know what to do with Damian Priest, because I don't think they knew what to do with Damian Priest before either. Like when he was in Judgment Day was about the only time that we had a solid plan for Damian Priest since he's been in WWE. So I'm a little lost as to like when we'll find like what we're looking for. If he's not going to be, and even in, if I remember correctly, even in Judgment Day, they tried to make him seem like it was him and Rhea that were leading it, when in all reality, we all knew it was really Rhea. Like, no one ever really thought that Damian was running shit. It was Rhea 1, Damian 2. So, like, I don't know, man. I think that they've been at a loss for words with Damian Priest for a while. He had the Bad Bunny thing. That was awesome. Other than that, main roster, best shit is Judgment Day. That's not a bad thing, but like that candle is extinguished and like we got to find something new to do with him. So you just can't have him fight Gunther every third month and then us be like cool with it. So yeah, man, I don't know. I will say that Damian Priest, I like Damian Priest. He did a great job of selling the shoulder tweak. I legitimately thought that he was kind of hurt. And then Gunther started focusing on it. And I was like, all right, that makes sense. But yeah, man, that's pretty much it as far as Gunther and Priest goes. I mean, they tried to pull that angle of he's street trash versus, you know, ring general. And I don't know, it didn't hit for me. But on to, as we kind of alluded to, the men's War Games match. This is how it's supposed to be done. This is absolute, like, I thought that the men's War Game match was so good just because you actually have a cohesive story. I think that was one of the bigger problems with the women's match is that there was not this big, everybody wasn't intertwined with each other. It was kind of a hodgepodge of women thrown together. The men, with the exception of Bronson Reed and CM Punk, all have had intertwining strong storylines. I like the addition of Bronson Reed. I like the addition of CM Punk. I want to know what Bronson Reed did to get that camera to black out after CM Punk stuck his hand into the cage and flipped him off. They had to black out the camera because Bronson did something very naughty. I don't know what he did, but it was naughty. The interesting thing about, especially with a War Games with the story, is always your entrances, all that kind of stuff. The new bloodline, the Timu bloodline, as we lovingly call them here, they entered all as one whole set, Bronson Reed included. Bronson Reed, who has his own entrance, enters under this bloodline entrance. The old bloodline, the OG bloodline, enters one by one. You hit Sammy's music, you hit Jimmy's music, then all of a sudden CM Punk's music hits, and then Roman Reigns' music hits. And I thought, that's interesting. Roman Reigns, that's four people. We're still missing somebody. Jey Uso is the final entrant for the men's War Game. I thought that was odd because Roman is your main man. He is what has made your company the money it's made over the past 10 years, is what Roman Reigns has been doing inside of the ring. The fact that they gave Jimmy his own entrance where he comes down from the crowd and the whole nine yards where everybody else is walking out regular, thought that says a lot for where Jimmy's at. I thought it was an interesting move. I think it says a lot about Roman too, to not, you know, I mean, we haven't heard any reports or anything that he like stunk it up backstage about it, but I thought it was very, very interesting. Roman, of course, Roman and Solo were the last two to leave the cage. There is a very funny moment, and I'm sure it's been memed, where you see the discussion happening between Sami Zayn, Roman Reigns, and CM Punk, and CM kind of goes to go back, and yep, absolutely, Roman sticks out the arm and cuffs it. It was a great little, those two together, it was awesome. You can tell why they've done some acting off of WWE television and on real television. That was very well sold. Even for me, I'm sitting there like, ooh, but you know, it was and the internet took off with it, which I know WWE loves. So you had a fucking dude, Tama Tonga, when they are about to do Jimmy's entrance, is spider monkey crawling on the inside of the cage around the all four corners of the cage. I mean, like a psychopath, just going the entire time he's doing it. It was that in itself made the match for me. I didn't even need to see him wrestle. That was just funny, just seeing a legit crazy person spider monkey around a War Games cage. Jacob Fatu was unreal in this match for the Timu bloodline. I've been on record being a massive Jacob Fatu fan. Dude, this was just a showcase for what Jacob Fatu can do. We had the the discourse with Reigns and Punk. That was cute throughout the entire match. Solo at one point locks the War Games cage after he comes out, so Roman can't get into the War Games cage. All of a sudden, the ref just doesn't have a key for the lock anymore, which is classic WWE, but like the idea of Roman Reigns, and I think I said it audibly, if Roman Reigns climbs this cage to get into this War Games match, this might be the best War Games of all time. And sure shit, Roman climbs into the fucking ring. Like, I mean, dude, it was like, it's like you were kids running from the cops and you had to hop a chain link fence. It climbs up this ring. It was a nice, I thought it was a nice touch. I did think it was very funny though, because we all know the ref has the key. We all knew this. At one point you do have a moment where CM Punk helps Roman Reigns. And you kind of knew, you were kind of waiting for that all match was, okay, is CM Punk going to fucking kick Roman in the dick here, or is he going to like help him, you know? And then he does help him. And the team cohesively worked together much better, it felt like. The Bloodline at one point, the OG Bloodline surrounds Solo and took Tyrant's just beating the shit out of him with finishers. And signatures. That was a great moment. I thought that was fucking awesome. And then Roman Reigns hitting the spear on him for the win is once again just chef's kiss. Punk then gets hugs from everybody except for Roman Reigns. Reigns put his hand out and CM Punk shook it. I didn't think that was going to happen. At one point, Paul Heyman had to run out to try and like unify the two men. To like yell at him through the fence. I don't know, man. It was, I thought that was probably the best match of the night. It started with a fucking like almost like Key and Peele level Madden introduction where they're like, you know, I think Jacob Fatu said, Jacob Fatu, I love Solo University. Like it was quite interesting. I think Jey Uso said Yeet University. It was that, like the old school sports intros were funny, but it did feel like weird placement. I don't know. It felt like, it did kind of feel like I was watching like a WWE like bloopers reel. Roman Reigns, like forever, the like perfect actor, him side-eyeing CM Punk throughout the night was awesome. I definitely said, I definitely think that Jacob Fatu won the night. The moment he no-sold shit, started no-selling stuff, it was awesome. Sami Zayn, Sami Zayn was a victim of a botchaloa. Tongaloa dropped Sami Zayn on the top turnbuckle, and Sammy sold the shit out of it. So I still don't know if it was on purpose or on accident, but man, it was funny. I don't know, man, all in all, like it was a really good match. There was, I think one or two things that stood out where I was like, I think at one point Roman Reigns like dives onto everybody. And it was like one of those moments where like when you're watching Raw and you're like, oh, look at all five of these people that are here to just catch this person. It kind of felt like one of those things. I don't know, man. All in all, great. I thought it was a great, great match. It's nice to see the OG Bloodline stand tall again. It's one of WWE's like longest shows, I think Survivor Series is. So like for them to put on a show at the end match, for Jacob Fatu to do what he does, awesome. There were some real injuries in that, unfortunately. I think Jacob Fatu got injured for real. WWE really has to look at, is doing a War Games every year for Survivor Series worth it? Or do we need to pick the years where we have a solid enough storyline to make it worth it? So I think that goes for men and women's. I don't know, man. Anything that you wanted to add on the men's War Games?
Not much, man. I mean, you really broke it down there. I would just say, I think it highlights, you know, obviously the glaring obvious differences between the men's and the women's, but just high level, it's like you look at, yes, there was a storyline within the women's War Games, but just between Rhea and Liv, and Raquel's kind of come in, but she's not really part of that. But then you have this huge bloodline feud and a much deeper, richer storyline within the men's War Games, where because of the format of it, you had to tack one onto each team. But I think that's what made this match, I mean, honestly, great. Honestly, great, because it was almost like you were watching a little movie within the pay-per-view itself, where you have the overarching storyline, but then you also had little subplots in between in there. And like you kind of mentioned, Roman Reigns and CM Punk kind of looking over their shoulder the whole match, Paul Heyman having to come out and be like, knock it off or you guys are going to lose, to where I think it kind of showed that they do have a mutual respect for each other. Like, they certainly don't like each other, but they have a level of respect. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what this favor is that Paul Heyman now apparently owes CM Punk. But I don't know. I think as it kind of, I don't think it wrapped anything up, but I think it kind of extends it. It gives it more life, because I felt like things with this bloodline storyline were kind of starting to get a little, you know, I don't know how I feel about it, Nico. I think that's what I'm trying to say. I don't feel good about it, but I don't necessarily hate it. I almost said stagnant, but I don't think it's getting stagnant. I think it's just kind of like you're waiting for the next shoe to drop. And it's like that anticipation of like, all right, what's going to happen? What's the shakeup going to be? And it's just kind of been this tension building up. And I think they did a good job of continuing to build that tension without it being annoying.
Yeah. And I will say, like, you know, it didn't feel like we got many answers out of either one of the War Games. There wasn't a lot of like things settled. It just kind of felt like a fucking speed bump along the way to probably what's going to be some sort of branch off of matches that are derived from this. In both the men and the women's. I thought that there were a lot more moments of good than bad, although I did think that there are some things that needed to be worked on. All in all, Survivor Series as a whole, if we look at it, for me, it was fun. It was a couple of hours of like good wrestling television, but did it like do anything for us? Or was it just like, could this have been like Saudi? You know what I'm saying? Could this have been a crown jewel where it was like, we didn't really get any furthering. And no Cody Rhodes on the card, which is nice. Awesome to give Cody a break from wrestling every PLE. But, you know, I think like we didn't really set anything up. And we didn't really push anything in the future. I thought the U.S. Championship and the Intercontinental Championship matches were great matches, and they would have been probably taken better on a different card that isn't bookended by two matches that are essentially like violence gimmicks where you're expecting either blood or kendo stick or, you know, something along that line. So, all in all, I think it was good television, even, you know, with some of the botches and everything. I think that it was probably all right. That's pretty much how we're going to end Survivor Series, is that it was probably all right. I'm hoping that we get more as far as like storyline continuation or things along the lines in other pay-per-views coming in the future. Like we said, we're right around the corner here from like really big pay-per-views. Survivor Series is kind of the start of it. And then you got Elimination Chamber. We also have Saturday Night Fight coming up. We got a lot of like cool things happening down the pipeline here. But speaking of Saturday Night, or actually, you know, we'll get to that in a second. What did overall on Survivor Series, where are you at with it?
Overall, Survivor Series, I mean, I'm the type of person, Nico, I never give anything a 10 out of 10. It's never going to happen. It's all right. I would give this a 7.8 out of 10. That's pretty good. It's good, but I think, like we've talked about throughout, there are some things that could have been tweaked, some matches that could have had some more interesting angles. Have Tiffany Stratton cash in that money in the bank. You know, maybe don't have Ludwig Kaiser in that triple threat match, although it did make it somewhat interesting. I don't know. 7.8 for me. Great pay-per-view, but left a little bit to be desired. What about you, man?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of in that same boat. I was going to say 7.5 is basically where I'm sitting in that like seven, mid-7 range. For me, I, you know, and it's funny, I didn't even think about taking Ludwig Kaiser out of that IC match, but like even if we got 4 weeks of a build of Bron Breakker and Sheamus, where it's like Sheamus really pushing, like, I want this title, this is the one title that's eluded me, blah, 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 I think we would have got a much, I don't even know much better because the match was a fucking banger, but we would have got a storyline along with the match. Instead of it being just haphazardly thrown together at the last minute. I don't know. It didn't reinvent, you know, sliced bread or anything for me, but it definitely did what it was supposed to do. It entertained me for a couple hours. So I guess with that being said, we will definitely move on to Saturday night main event. Man, oh man, I don't think I realized, and you had made this known to me before we went live, that this is going to be on NBC live on television. It is not just going to be a Peacock event, which is kind of nice. It's nice to get, you know, NBC is a lot of eyes. Not that WWE needs the eyes, but like you get people back into wrestling that haven't maybe been into wrestling, or somebody who grew up watching wrestling on Saturday night and now all of a sudden it's back. I don't know, man. It could be an interesting way to get people in. The card, it's very interesting as well, I guess we could say. We have that weird match that we've talked about between Cody Rhodes and Kevin Owens, which feels like this has been building for so long on SmackDown, with Kevin Owens doing car interviews and Cody being in the ring, acting enraged. It's all been set up. Owens felt betrayed by Cody, who aligned with Roman Reigns at one point. You know, Cody's defending Randy Orton, who's been hospitalized by a very safely worked pile driver. Sami Zayn and Drew McIntyre is also on this card. Drew McIntyre did make a surprise return after Survivor Series. He laid out Sami Zayn with a brogue kick. Awesome. I mean, cool. Like, you know, like Drew, I feel like, is another one where they're like, what the fuck do we do with Drew McIntyre? Which sucks because he's a fantastic wrestler, and maybe we shouldn't have gimmicked him as like the Scottish dude in a kilt and a sword. Maybe we should have, you know, had him outside of that, but I get it. He essentially on Raw, McIntyre claimed that Sami Zayn and Jey Uso's reunion with Roman Reigns basically said that people don't change. Like he said, you know, like shit doesn't, you know, I'm not new here. People don't change. Sami Zayn got butthurt about that. Adam Pearce told Sami Zayn, go for it. We'll let you fight on Saturday night main event. Granted, it's not a pay-per-view. This is a, you know, like television show. So that makes sense. It's a very television show card so far. But you can tell that they're actually trying to put something into this because we have the World Heavyweight Championship, Gunther versus Finn Balor versus Damian Priest. This is a more digestible way to, I think, take the match that we just bitched about is by adding Finn Balor in it. I think that maybe we could have done what we did on a Monday Night Raw instead of on Survivor Series and maybe done this triple threat at Survivor Series. But nonetheless, just a thought. I don't know, man. I feel like, hopefully is a barn burner. I hope it's not slowed down by the interactions that we've already had with Priest and Gunther. I kind of hope Finn takes it because they're pushing this whole angle of Judgment Day knows best when Finn is in charge. I kind of fuck with that. It's just this cocky little angle that Finn's taking, which I definitely think is going to be the end of Liv and Dom in the Judgment Day. I think it's going to be Liv, Dom, and Raquel branch off, or maybe Raquel surprises us and stays with the Judgment Day. But I think that adding Finn into this just spices it up just a little bit. It's nice because Gunther and Priest are obviously very familiar, and then you add Finn Balor in there. It's a nice little spice up. We have a Women's World Championship match between Liv Morgan and Io Sky. Man, it's like we didn't just say that they were going to probably branch off with different matches from these war games. And the first one we see is a Women's World Championship with Liv Morgan and Io Sky. Sky, yes, had technically earned her shot before Survivor Series. She had become like number one contender or whatever it was a couple weeks prior. Definitely gives her a little bit momentum with the fact that her team defeated Liv's team. I don't think the championship changes hands, though. I think you got to keep it in Liv Morgan's hands, at least for the foreseeable future. And then finally, dude, we get what we kind of talked about a little bit last week. We get the Women's United States Championship. It's either going to be Bayley or Chelsea Green versus Meechan or Tiffany Stratton. This has an opportunity to be kind of cool. If it's Tiffany Stratton and Tiffany Stratton wins at Saturday Night Main Event, she has a belt and she has the money in the bank. Can we see a two-belt Tiffy? Because two-belt Tiffy, one, has a ring to it, and two, could be very entertaining television with her kind of snotty Barbie-ing the two belts would be, kind of sick. On the other hand, we all know that I am a very big Chelsea Green stan. I would love to see Chelsea Green in a position to be the Women's United States Champion. I've seen her sign autographs that say Chelsea Green, first Women's United States Champion already. That makes me think she's not going to win it at all, that she's definitely losing to Bayley for sure. I think it's probably going to end up coming down to Bayley and Tiffany. I just don't have enough faith that they're going to push Meechan or Chelsea Green, even though they probably both deserve it. I don't know, dude. This last one, I think, has probably the most little bit of talking point that we can do because there is some up in the air about it. With the women's, I guess there's brackets on both sides of it now because there's a Women's Intercontinental Championship that they debuted. And that they started when Raw was in Glendale, which that crowd was not as loud as I would have hoped for an Arizona wrestling crowd. So let's fix that, guys. But yeah, I don't know, Chris, what do you think? This Women's United States Championship, you got Bayley and Chelsea Green or Meechan and Tiffany Stratton. How do you see it playing out?
Ooh, I mean, I think that Bayley has just kind of lost a lot of her luster and what, you know, people were excited about in watching her. So it kind of makes me think maybe Chelsea Green gets into this match. I also agree that the storyline of having Tiffany Stratton hold that title while also still having the money in the bank and the, you know, more that they can milk out of that. I think for sure Tiffany Stratton is getting into this match. I think it's just going to be a question of who comes out the other side. And I do think, because either way you go with Chelsea Green or Tiffany Stratton, I think either one of them would be an interesting, you know, pick. Because you can have like, oh, Chelsea Green, like, oh, I never had a doubt. I called it. I've been signing autographs for a week. And then obviously what we said could happen with Tiffany. So very interesting. But that's kind of how I think more wishful thinking more than anything.
Most definitely. I think I'm definitely wishfully thinking as well. We'll have to see what pops up in the next couple of Raws and SmackDowns. As far as both of those belts are concerned, the women's IC and the women's US title. But last, but I guess not least, and very, very important to us here at the Valley Sports Plug, the Arizona State Sun Devils are your Big 12 champions. Man, Sami Zayn, Jey Uso on the field with our Lord and Savior Cam Scataboo, and they had the belt and everything, man. It was, for me, a full moment of just absolute worlds colliding coming in. I remember last year being in the Pac-12 and thinking, damn, it sucks. Of course, the WWE works with the Big 12 and not a conference like the Pac-12. Well, now we're in the Big 12. We won the championship and we came for your belt. And our MVP is walking around Tempe rocking that damn thing, as he should. It was very cool for me to see a Sun Devils logo on the side of a WWE belt. It's one of those things you don't think is going to happen. And it was a cool little moment inside of my household where my kid went, "What?" And my wife went, "Is that Sami Zayn and Jey Uso?" And I'm like, "Yeah, absolutely." So we want to say big shout out to the Devils. That is awesome. Shout out WWE for doing this, because like, you got to know that everybody's a big kid at heart as soon as they are given a championship title. I mean, I've seen it when I bring around my big old strap, and you know, I see everybody turn into a kid when this thing comes out. You know, everybody wants to spin it and everybody wants to hold it up in the air and all that kind of shit. It definitely turns you into a big kid. So I think it's a great move by WWE. I think it's also a great way to get eyes on your product, because I wonder how many people looked at that and went, "Oh, wrestling." And then it was on, you know, Friday night or Monday night, two nights later. I wonder how well it actually does for him. So yeah, man, that was super cool. Go Sun Devils. We will see you in Atlanta in the Peach Bowl. We probably won't be there in person, but we'll definitely be watching from afar. So yeah, always cool when the VSP worlds can collide here at Valley of the Suplex. Chris, you got anything else for the people before we go, my man?
No, man, I was just obviously really excited to see ASU, you know, win the Big 12 championship. It caught me off guard because I didn't even know about the partnership between the WWE and the Big 12. So I was kind of right there with you. For anyone who is familiar with Rick and Morty, it almost felt like I had turned on an episode of Interdimensional Cable, where it's like in some other parallel timeline, WWE is actually a football conference or something. I don't know. It was interesting. It was crazy. And then, Nico, we were watching the game together, and you told me about the belt before I even got to see it. So that would be a cool replica to have. I don't know if you really could probably find that anywhere. But, man, no, obviously Saturday night's main event is coming up this coming weekend. So I have the recap of that for you in a couple weeks here. This is the first time since 2008 that this special event has been held. It's going to be a two-hour special, like Nico mentioned, airing on NBC and being simulcast, streaming on Peacock as well. The last time there was a Saturday night's main event was 2008, like I said, and it was Edge beating Jeff Hardy in a singles match, to tell you, you know, a bit about that.
Oh, hop in the time machine, huh?
Right.
Goodness gracious.
But I also, Nico, if it's okay with you, we can cut this out. But I have to mention, you know, guys, our stream schedule, we're trying to get on it. We're trying to do this every 2 weeks. But sometimes life happens, and life is happening in a very big way for Nico right now. He is about to see the birth of his second child, probably around the time this video comes out. So make sure you wish Nico and his wife and family a big congrats and all the best wishes, as me and my family are doing. Nico, got you in my prayers, boy.
I appreciate that, man. It's going to be a hectic time here in the Valley of the Suplex universe. We are still going to bring you shows. I'm going to take some time off, just to, you know, as one should, to start. And once we get into a routine, we'll be back at it, man. I'm going to be watching wrestling, going to be taking my notes just like I always do. We'll be right back at it with it. So I appreciate all the love and the support. Be rocking that baby to sleep watching Monday Night Raw for sure. You know, you see those videos of dads doing like F5s to their kids and into bed. It's exactly what's going to be happening in this household. So, yeah, man, we are going to be busy at Casa de Nico over here. We got a 3-month-old puppy, and then we're going to have a baby, yeah, probably about the time this video comes out. So fingers crossed everything goes well. Nash, Dad will see you soon. As far as everybody else, if you are still here, thank you for hanging out with us. You are the truest of Suplexians. You're the faces of all faces. You're the heels of all heels. We appreciate you very much for hanging on with us. If you are here, make sure you like, make sure you subscribe, make sure you follow the Valley Sports Blog. Please turn your notifications on. We'll tell you whenever we're coming live, whether it be for the heat checks, the round tables, anything we got. We're doing Diamondbacks. We're doing Cardinals. We're doing everything. We got ASU on here. You can see me chopping it up about ASU on one of our last streams. So, yeah, man, if you guys are still here, just show us some love, like and subscribe, leave a comment if you like. Tell us we suck, tell us we don't. It don't matter. We appreciate you guys hanging in there. For myself and Chris Patrick, all of us at the Valley Sports Bug, we will see you on the other side. Thank you very much.